Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Hello, everybody. Good morning and welcome to the United Stand. I'm Mark Goldbridge and this is your latest Manchester United news. Lots to get into this morning. I was just a little bit late because I was just reading about Garnacho and this other young player that Manchester United might be approaching, 16-year-old, according to Plenty Goal. But actually, what I want to talk about on the show this morning is more about the unthinkable of Jadon Sancho coming back to Manchester United. We've also got updates on Sporting midfielder Jungmann. David Ornstein has been speaking about January transfers for Manchester United. The Telegraph have given a Manchester United player positivity streak, signing of the summer so far. We'll talk about that. I also want to talk about the improvements that I think have happened over the last few weeks with Amorim. A lot of people are, you know, talking about changes in systems and stuff, which I just don't. I think it's fanciful, but I will give you my feelings on that. Also want to talk about Luke Shaw. Luke Shaw having a bit of a glow up at the moment. A lot of people saying, why aren't you giving him any credit? I want to talk about that. Joe Bellingham, something on that as well. And a potential return for a Manchester United player that left in the last 2 years, who may be heading back to the Premier League, should Manchester United be looking at him? Scooby-Doo. Anyway, we also... what's this? That's about David Ornstein as well. Brilliant stuff. Okay, lots to get into this morning, as I said. But what is Amorim's unthinkable choice this morning? Well, it actually revolves around Jadon Sancho. So things are not going very well for Jadon Sancho at Aston Villa at the moment. Things are not going very well for Jadon Sancho at all. He is starting to become a player that gets loaned out every year. I saw a brilliant comment in our comments yesterday about Jadon Sancho. You may as well call him rent-a-car, because he's like one of those car firms now who every year is just getting leased out to everybody, but nobody actually owns. Well, we do own Jadon Sancho, and Man United could well be facing an unthinkable decision come the next few months. Now, there was a hint in the summer that we might do this. I find it repulsive, but some people think it's not a bad idea. We have got the option of a plus one on Jadon Sancho. Now, we can activate that, effectively keeping him as a Man United player for another year in the attempt to try and get a transfer fee for him in his final year, or we can just let him go for nothing this summer. That removes the 250 grand a week. That also puts up a big, massive L to say that we spent £75 million on a player who's still in his mid-20s and we're letting go for free. I think this will come down to... I don't even think this will come down to Ruben Amorim, but I'm interested to know what you think we should do. I don't even think it comes down to Ruben Amorim, because I don't think Ruben Amorim wants Jadon Sancho. I think this is going to come down to the business people and whether they go... Do we extend him to try and get a transfer fee, or do we let him go and admit we've just blown £75 million and £1 million a month in wages on a player who is still going to be mid-20s going for nothing? And I think that is a decision that is not going to be our decision. It's going to be everybody else's decision. And I'm not too sure as to what they're going to do. For me, get rid. You know, I think that the way a football club should be acting, and it goes bigger than Jadon Sancho, is that if a player is not part of the vision, you remove that player. We're a football club. We're not a bloody bank. But unfortunately, we are run like a bank and we are run like a business. And they may trigger that final year just to try and get some money for him in the summer. Because let's be honest, Jadon Sancho has probably been running his contract down for the last 2 or 3 years, knowing that if he's free next summer, it's another big payday for him as well. So I just think cut our losses and go. There's a lot of positivity around Manchester United at the moment. There is a vision to build and be better with the right profile as player. And these types of players are... You know, they're not the right sort of players for Manchester United. I mean, I literally just saw a quote coming in from what was it? I need to talk about this player that we're going for as well. I think it's coming from Fabrizio Romano about Garnacho. Here it is. So Garnacho on why he joined Chelsea. When I spoke with the club and Maresca, it's important also the style of play we have. He explained a lot to me in a video call with him. It's a big chance to improve as a player in a team like Chelsea. So, I mean, but look, I presume that interview is just to make Chelsea fans like him. Because as a Man United fan, I'm like, so what? You know, actually, to be fair, the way Chelsea play, they do use wingers. So when he talks about style of play, probably does suit you better because you certainly don't have the footballing IQ to play behind a striker in a two. We saw that last season. So, you know, going to Chelsea and having a video call about a 4-3-3, fair play. You know, get out, basically. And I think this is, to me, it's gone beyond the whole irritant at these, you know, the bomb squad or whatever you want to call it. They're just not part of the future squad. And we should cut ties. And it would be unthinkable to renew Sancho's contract just to try and hopefully get a transfer fee for him, which actually nobody's going to give us. So I think the worst thing that could happen is that he actually starts doing okay for Villa and United go, let's extend the contract. And then what if he comes back next summer and says, well, I want another loan then. I'm not going anywhere. I think he's got United by the balls and United just need to go. If I was to Jim Radcliffe, I'd say it wasn't my mistake. It's got nothing to do with my recruitment team. Let him go. I'm going to focus on the things that are in my control because we're heading towards a big place now. And look, I wasn't going to bring this in early, but the Telegraph today have voted Mbeumo as the summer signing of the season so far. You know, across the whole of the Premier League, he is the summer signing of the season, according to the Telegraph. Now, we must take all this stuff with a pinch of salt. The 8 o'clock show was brilliant last night. So many good questions. Looking forward to tonight's one, as always. But I only listen to fan opinion really now because there are good opinions in the media. It's not totally bad, but we saw it a few weeks ago with The Athletic calling Sesko a flop. You know, it's... there's a lot of crap out there, but I did, you know, I think for me, it's like a bonus. You know, if the media actually get it, fair play. If they don't, I don't need it. You know, they don't appreciate Dalit, etc. But when they're saying that Mbeumo is player of the signing of the season so far, and you look at the, you know, the amount of players that were brought in the summer. And I think, you know, Eze's done very well at Arsenal. Madueke was doing very, very, very well at Arsenal. Man City have made some good signings. And look, that's without being arrogant and talking about someone like Truffert at Bournemouth, who's brilliant left back, absolutely brilliant. So there's been some good signings. There's been some big flops, potentially. But Mbeumo's got 4 Premier League goals in 9 games in a Man United side. And the minute he hits double figures, I think that's not easy to do. When you're not a striker at Man United, it's not even easy to do when you're a striker at Man United. So we're in a good place at the moment. And I think we just need to avoid bad decisions. Simple as that. So let me know your thoughts on that one. Got a lot to get through this morning, but a little bit of breaking news coming in. This is coming in from Plettigol. Man United are in strong talks over the signing of Kevin Filling. He hates dentists, apparently. The 16-year-old striker could leave AIK this winter and his price is valued at around 3 million euros. There is also interest from the Bundesliga. It's got Favel written all over that. I don't dismiss these types of stories because they are exciting, but we're going to get 3 or 4 of these at least every season. I can't tell you anything about this player. Maybe somebody can, but, you know, little bit like Obi coming in from Arsenal and Kone, and there are others. We are looking around Europe and the world for 15, 16, 17-year-olds that can make us better in our youth department. And maybe they will become first-team players. Lots of clubs do this, by the way. We just don't hear about it. Man City do it, Liverpool do it, Chelsea do it. So it's encouraging that we do it, but it doesn't mean they're going to be first team players. I mean, you know, what's Obi doing at the moment? Like a year ago, there was this big noise around Obi. What's he doing at the moment? He's still developing and maybe he will hit the first team and maybe he won't. So look, these things are always exciting, but I don't want them to be sporadic. I want them to be regular because the more of these young, talented players that we're spotting and bringing in, the higher the percentage chance that one or two of them will actually break through into the first team setup at some point in the next few years. So always encouraging. Let me talk to you about David Ornstein. He has been speaking with NBC about Manchester United's January activity, specifically around Xerxes and Mainoo. And he's basically said this, that it's extremely unlikely that, pretty remote, in fact, is what he said, chance that Xerxes or Mainoo will head to West Ham in the January transfer window, mainly because nobody even knows if they'll actually even be leaving in the summer. But probably, for West Ham, it's probably out of their price range, maybe, I don't know. But that was sort of coming out yesterday anyway, wasn't it? We spoke in depth about Mainoo yesterday. And look, I just think on those two at the moment, United's message will be that they don't want them to go because, I saw another journalist yesterday writing about this and I'm like, as if Man United at the end of October are going to say, yeah, Xerxes and Mainoo are available. I mean, you're going to say they're not available, knowing that they're going to want to go. And then, I mean, it's a negotiation tactic, isn't it? They want to go. You don't want to let them go. And then if a club comes in, that they've got to pay. So maybe someone like Mainoo wants to go and Napoli wants him and he wants Napoli. And Man United are saying, no, no, no. Napoli have got to do something to make us say yes. So United's stance will be, no, we're not doing anything. And that will be the case until January, unless somebody offers us something, that works for us. But there's still 2 months. Like, what if Xerxes got, what if Sesko got injured? You know, what if Xerxes came off the bench and scored a hat trick in 5 minutes? You know, weird things can happen. But I think we all know that January will be a very interesting time for players that aren't getting the game time that they want, as they aren't at the moment. So we'll have to wait and see what happens with that. With regards to a player that could potentially returning to the Premier League, I think this is going to generate a little bit of conversation. In fact, people are getting a lot of comments in already because we're whizzing through a lot today because it's going to be fast paced this morning. So make sure you smash a like and get your comments in. Darren says Xerxes needs more game time. Robust says, Mark, you just revealed our transfer strategy to our rivals. I think it's everybody's transfer strategy. You never say a player's for sale because even if they are, you say that they're not in the hope that you get a better offer. Don't worry, mate. I haven't revealed some secret. But Scott McTominay, I've not mentioned this for a few days because I've been reading it for a few days and I thought, you know what, I don't want to bring it into a news show, but I am going to now because there's yet another story this morning about Scott McTominay, who apparently is loving life playing for Napoli, but is not loving life in Naples because he's basically become a bit of a god, a footballing god. They love their football there and they absolutely love Scott McTominay, and he's a player that, when he was at Manchester United, really appreciates the private life and being left alone. And he isn't apparently able to do that out there in Italy. So he's already thinking about coming back to the Premier League, which is just weird, isn't it? I mean, he's doing really well. He had a bit of a slow start to this season, but he scored, I think, 3 goals in these last 2 games. Brilliant season last year. A legend in Naples now. And they'd be devastated if he left. But apparently the lifestyle is causing him a bit of grief. Now, it just sounds really strange to me, but I don't think there would be a shortage of takers at Premier League clubs. And the interesting thing is that if Scott McTominay were to leave in the summer, going from Serie A to the Premier League will not be a problem for a multitude of Premier League clubs to drop 30, 40 million, 50 million pounds on the table and say, we want Scott McTominay. So he's 20. What did I just look at? He's 29. 29 in December, Scott McTominay. Wow, where do the years go? Skibbidoo, how can he be 29? Is that right? 29? He's 29 in December. Well, bloody hell. I can't believe it, man. Gabby, I can't believe it. Scott McTominay, he's only 29 in December. Ali, yeah, I can't believe that. So he's 29. in December. So if he's heading back to the Premier League, I suppose he would want to do that quite soon. Would the question is, I think there's plenty of clubs that would take Scott McTominay. Everton, West Ham, probably Brentford, you know, maybe Newcastle. There's a lot of clubs I think would take Scott McTominay. Would we at Manchester United take Scott McTominay back? And should Manchester United take Scott McTominay back? Because I want to get ahead of this before it becomes a thing over the next coming weeks and months if he's heading back. And the honest answer is I'm conflicted. Conflicted. Hello and welcome to Conflicted Bridge, a new morning section on the news show. I'm conflicted on this because, well, let's run a poll on this one. This is a poll. Would you sign McTominay back? Start the poll. I'm conflicted on it, right? Because clearly there's something going on because it keeps being mentioned. And if he did come back, I don't know whether we've got a first refusal, but he does love Manchester United. And I don't think we would bring him back because of his age. I don't think we'd want to. Napoli would quite rightly want 40, 50, maybe 60 million pounds. And he's 29. So that's straight away. So Jim's going to say, no, we're not doing that. The reason I'm conflicted, though, is you got Mbeumo, you got Cunha. If you need to bring a number 10 on later on in the game, is that not what McTominay is? But then, is he quick enough for that role? I just think, I don't know. I look at Mason Mount and I look at Scott McTominay and I go, not the same player, but in a way, as the backup number 10, do they not offer something very similar in the sense that you wouldn't start them for me, but as part of the squad, you do get a certain guaranteed level of effort and threat. I just wouldn't pay £50 million for it. But look, it is certainly one to, you know, maybe chew the fat on over the next coming weeks and months. 67% of you wouldn't do it, which is interesting. Let me just catch up on some of the super chats we've had this morning. I don't want to neglect people. Emily Derry says, is the transfer fee going to be worth the expense of Sancho's wages? No, I'd cut and run. Yeah, so going back to the unthinkable about whether we extend Jadon Sancho's contract in the summer by 1 year to try and get a transfer fee, or whether we just cut our losses and let him go for free. Emily raises a great point again, because if you think about it, if we are paying 250 grand a week at the moment, that's £1 million a month. And the minute you extend his contract, you've got to pay £1 million a month, which is basically 12 million every year. And are you going to get 15 million for him to make a £3 million profit? Well, you wouldn't pay the wages. You wouldn't pay the wages because he'd be gone. I think it's a big risk. And also, Sancho doesn't necessarily have to have to agree to a transfer. I've always said, and I've been proved right on this, remember in the summer when Man United kept talking about a transfer fee for Jadon Sancho, I know for a fact we lined up three deals where people were going to pay money for Jadon Sancho. But it never got off the ground because Sancho was like, well, why would I sign a contract with, let's pretend, AC Milan on 150 grand a week, which is £100,000 a week pay cut, so that Man United can get 15 million. When in a year's time, I get the money and I'll still be able to be on the equivalent of 250 grand a week. So why would you do that? Why would anybody do that? Forget Jadon Sancho. Imagine you, right? Let's say you're on 200 grand a week. You got 1 year left on your contract. You're in your mid-20s, and you know in a year's time, you're free from your contract, and whatever club that wants you doesn't have to pay a transfer fee. So you say, I want 5 million transfer signing on fee, and I want 200 grand a week because you're getting me for free. Why would you then go? Why would you choose not to do that, sign a contract with someone on less money so that your club can get a transfer fee? It's not logical. So I think Emily's right. We just need to cut. I don't know why Man United are thinking about extending it. It makes no sense. Marlo says, have we forgotten that Amrin studied coaching under Mourinho, basing everything on a solid defence should not come as a surprise? I want to talk about this, Marlo. I also want to bring Luke Shaw into the show because I think that'll be a very interesting conversation. Sancho loses value every time he plays. Cut ties, says Junkyard James. I actually see it as a massive positive that Jadon Sancho's out of contract in the summer. I actually see it as a massive positive when you end a relationship that's toxic. It's freedom, but it's freedom for us. We paid the £75 million. We've given him £250,000 a week. There's not a lot we can do about that. It's gone. It's history. But the future, I'm counting down the months. In, you know, literally in the summer, he's gone. At the end of June, he's gone. We pay him no more money. He's not our problem. Why would you try and extend that on a gamble that you might be able to get a transfer fee that you won't? It makes no sense. Scuba-Doo is another 10. Amrin would love to play another 10 in midfield. Give him some more and he will start them in defence. No four more for me. He's a Savish. At this point, I'd take Mark Goldbridge as director of football. He's been scouting chaos for years, says the Gold Protocol. And Nick P says, he's not coming back. Why would you give up good food and hero worship to get bantered in the Premier League for being average, says Nick P. Well, you know, maybe there's some fair points there. Let me just cut that back. Just going back to what Marlo said, though, I don't know whether to talk about Luke Shaw next or not. I want to talk about what Marlo said about Amrin, because I do want to talk about how I think what I think has changed over the last few weeks, because I don't think it's as systematic or formational or as in-depth as some people think. You know, I think football is very simple. I think the reason you could converse with Alan Shearer in a conversation about football is because even though he's the Premier League's top goal scorer, football's really simple and anybody can have an opinion on it. I also think football tactically is quite simple. I think people like Pep Guardiola go very granular and try and train every scenario. And then you get people like Big Sam Allardyce who don't really do much training at all, motivate his team in the dressing room on a Saturday and say things like, let's be direct, let's win the second ball, let's be competitive and aggressive, and it can work. So football's just a very, very, very simple thing. But before I get into that, I just want to say there was a couple of other topical things I wanted to just very much, very quickly summarise before we get into a good couple of topics. Jormlen of Sporting has been linked to us again. I think that will continue to happen. Obviously, a former player of Amrin, a disciple of Amrin's system, and a very good player that will be moving from Sporting in the summer. I think when you talk about Anderson, Wharton, and I see a lot of people talking about Anderson this morning, Slow Sports News, make sure you follow, subscribe and join the United Stand community, because we were talking about it at 8 o'clock last night and we've moved on to other things. But Anderson, Belaba, Stiller, Wharton will all be Man United targets in the summer. But I would add in Jormlen as well, because he will be leaving Sporting and he is a former player of Amrin and he fits the profile age-wise. He is, I believe, 26, but I mean, he does have an Arsenal tattoo on his arm, which may be unsurmountable for some, but he'll be 27 in the summer. So I still think he's a potential player. But interestingly, this morning, there is conversations going on in the Manchester Evening News that Manchester City are ready to enter that race as well. So all I'd say about that is, again, it's ridiculously early to start saying we're going to sign this player, we're going to sign that player. I think there's a January transfer window to go and get a midfielder first. Then in the summer, I think the Jormlens, the Belabers, the Whartons and et cetera will become, you know, the topic of conversation. But if Man City are looking at him, it just shows you what sort of a quality player he is, and maybe we should be in that race. Apparently, Job Bellingham is not interested in signing for Manchester United in January. He's very much focused on the pathway that he's taken leaving England to go to Dortmund. So returning and coming to Manchester United is apparently not of interest to him. That's absolutely fine, because as most of us have said, Job Bellingham is not of interest to us either. So, you know, we're both happy there if that's true. Because I don't think that that's the right sort of signing for Man United at all. And third story, which was something that Beth covered yesterday, I don't I didn't talk about it last night, and it's not that I don't want to talk about stuff that Beth talks about on the 2 o'clock show, because I think it's important that if I talk about something, Beth might want to talk about it and give her opinion and vice versa. It was the Rasmus story, that Napoli might be willing to pay for Rasmus in January to, you know, get that deal done. I found it a little bit strange because they don't actually have to do it till the summer. So why would you do it earlier in January? But I think this is a positive. A lot of people talk about Garnacho, Rashford and their loan deals. We probably don't talk about the Rasmus deal enough. And for one, I'm absolutely ecstatic that it's going well for him, because I think he was a player that, you know, it wasn't going well at the end of last season. But, you know, I think his attitude and work rate, and he probably was thrown under the bus a lot in his time at Manchester United. So, you know, you look at someone like Donny van der Beek, who's just never been able to resurrect his career. And again, I would liken van der Beek to Rasmus. I think they were, you know, hardworking lads who wanted to do the best at Man United. And van der Beek's career has just fell off a cliff. He's not been able to recover. Whereas, you know, Rasmus is doing very well in a short period of time in the Champions League, in Serie A, and for his national team. So I think it's an intelligent move for Napoli. I couldn't really get my head around why they'd want to activate the clause early, because they'll have, it's not like anyone else can come in and activate it, and it's not like we can, I don't know. The only thing I thought was, is there a scenario? I have a theory. This is why I brought it into the news show. Are Napoli looking to activate it early in January to give us the money early, which we will like, because in the summer there might be a thing like Sancho's. Remember, like last year with Sancho, we thought that Chelsea had an obligation to buy for 25 million. And then we found out in March, oh, if you pay 5 million, you don't have to do it. And I'm just wondering if, in fact, not wondering, I'm pretty certain, is there a 5 million fee that Man United could pay to bring him back and keep him? Or is there a 5 million fee that Man United can pay to bring him back and sell him for more than 40 million. And that's what I'm thinking makes that make sense. So if Napoli want to pay us 40 million in January to get the Rasmus deal done, it can only be because there's something that allows us to maybe pay them a little bit of money and sell him for more, or bring him back. So that maybe that's what it's to do with. Because £40 million for Rasmus, if he keeps scoring goals in Serie A and in the Champions League, is quite cheap for a 22-year-old. So maybe that's what it's all about. I don't think we need to bring him back. I'd love it. I'd love it if he came back and scored goals and fought with Sesko. I'd absolutely love it. And maybe that's what it's part about as well. But we're a long way from that. You know, we're a long, long way from that. But I think that might be a theory. That might be why they're doing it. That's a lovely cup of tea this morning. Absolutely lovely. It's really good. Ooh, it's not hot water today. It's actually tea. McTominay would battle Haaland for most goals as a striker, says Marlowe. Thank you very much. Do we rate Casado or Gavi of Barca midfield-wise, says Eric. Yeah, but we'll never get anyone out of Barca. No point doing that. Let Sancho go for free. Another English player not living up to his potential. This needs studying because it's not the first, says David. Maybe it's a cultural thing. Maybe English players, British players are, you know, society-wise, just not hungry. I don't know. But then again, you look at people like Declan Rice, they're okay. 68% says Ansaka. You know, maybe some Man United thing, actually. Because actually, you look at Arsenal, they've got a lot of young English players that are now becoming senior English players who do absolutely fantastically well. Would you sign McTominay back? 68% of you say no, 32% of you say yes. Thank you very much for that. Right, I want to talk about a couple of things here that I think are going to generate conversation that maybe they'll even roll over into the 8 o'clock show tonight. First things first, I want to talk about Luke Shaw. I've had a few people say to me, why won't you give Luke Shaw any credit? And I'm like, well, you might be new enough that you don't know the story around Luke Shaw. And you might be new enough to, you know, you might be old enough to know. Luke Shaw's been at Man United a long time, almost as long as the United stand has been a thing. In fact, maybe he has been. Maybe not. Maybe we're a year older. He has been at Man United for a long, long time. And I backed Luke Shaw for a long time. People used to have a pop at him for his weight, his ability. Mourinho didn't like him. And I always felt there was a very, very good player there. And there's plenty of videos where I backed him. And I was even accused of ridiculous stuff for backing Luke Shaw. But I don't really back him anymore. And the simple reason comes down to this. I find it very difficult the way the club and he handled not being fit for 7 months before the Euros, going to the Euros, not fit, only being fit for the semi-final and the final, coming back from that, and then not being fit for Man United again for 4 or 5 months. I think if Paul Pogba had done that, he would have been vilified. So I don't know why that was swept under the carpet by the player and the club. I'd never understood why that was just, you know, that was fine to do. He was not fit for Man United, either side of the Euros, but prioritised England over Man United. And I'm sorry, I put Man United before England. So I always had a problem with that. And it made me question the player's dedication to the football club. And it's always been an issue for me. And like ever since then. But he's playing well at the moment. He's playing well at the moment. And you know, I've always liked him as a player. I just don't appreciate people who put their country before Manchester United. And I think the evidence is there of that. I'm also quite dubious as to why he's not been injured since the end of last season and is playing so brilliantly at the moment. Yet when I look at this last two seasons, 23-24 season, he was injured from August to November, came back, and then was injured from February till June. Then last season, he was injured from August till November, and then was injured from December till April. So the last two seasons, he's barely played at all. This season, he's not been injured since May, and he's playing really, really well. And I'm sort of like, is it as simple that England is on the horizon and suddenly he's magically fit? I just don't. Or is he going to get injured at some point very, very soon? Is he? Are we actually on borrowed time? So I think the thing with me with Luke Shaw is that as a player, always liked him as a player. I don't know the person, but as a player, I like him. There's just things that have gone off that pissed me off. You know, the injuries are frustrating, even though they're not his fault. And the prioritisation of England over Man United just makes me think, if I'm being completely honest, I wish Martinez was fit. I'd rather play Aidan Heaven. I don't look at Luke Shaw anymore and go, I just don't think Manchester, you know, I'm sure he'd sit there and go, I love Man United. I love Man United. But for me, the whole England thing just made me sort of like go, I was a massive fan of this player. Now, when he plays well, I'll say he's playing well, and that's it. I've just not fell out of love. I was never in love, but he used to be one of my favourite players. Now he's just a Man United player, and if he plays well, I'll give him credit. But I've I'm not invested in Luke Shaw anymore. I think that's the best word. I'm just not invested in Luke Shaw. I'm invested in De Ligt. I'm invested in Ahmad. I'm invested in Cunha and in Mbeumo and Lemens and Yoro and Dorgu. And, you know, I'm even invested in Harry Maguire, even though he's, you know, 32. You know what you're getting with Harry. And although he wants to play for England, I think he gives a lot for Manchester United as well. I think with Luke Shaw, I'm just not invested in him. If he plays well, I'll give him credit, like I say, but it's not that I don't like him. It's more that I really did like him. And I just felt he let us down a little bit that season with England and injury. And it's as simple as that. And look, maybe he'll get injured next week and he'll be out for 6 months. But I also do think World Cup year for England and he's suddenly playing really well and fit. I'll laugh if he doesn't get picked for England in the next international break, actually. I reckon that this is all working towards that. And I think Tuchel will pick him. But yeah. Lazy Cat said you're indifferent to him. Well, I'm not indifferent to him because he's part of our best 11 at the moment. And I want him to play well. And he did play well on Saturday. But he used to be one of my favourite players who I used to defend a lot. And now I think I'd just go, let him crack on. You know, if he plays well, he plays well. Personally, when Martinez is fit, I don't want him in the team anyway. Whereas I think a few years ago, I would have gone, oh, I don't know about that. I think that's a bit harsh. You know, Martinez is good, but Luke Shaw is one of my favourite players. I'm just not like that anymore. But he's going to, you know, in relation to Luke Shaw, he is going to be here for the next 2 years. His contract doesn't run out until the end of the 27 season. So we've got 2 years of Luke Shaw. So it's not that I'm saying get him out of our club. I don't like him. It's just I'm not really invested in him. We've got 2 more years of Luke Shaw, and then I think we'll move him on. So, you know, if he can play like he did on Saturday, he's a very useful, experienced player. And if he's fit, he's a very useful player. But, I mean, whether you can trust the motivations of why he's fit and, you know, how long he can stay fit, that's a different conversation. I'm not going to say that, you know, he's faked injury for the last 2 years and only turns up for England. That'd be completely ridiculous. But motivational-wise, I think we're seeing a lot of players motivated this year, by the way. I think, you know, Marcus Rashford is motivated by going to the World Cup. You know, Kobbie Mainoo apparently is as well. I think there's a lot of players this year. It's a bit like being in your last year of your contract. We all know that's a thing. Last year of your contract, players suddenly start playing really, really well. It's proven, you know, the Willian effect. But also, if that's a thing, I genuinely do think that this massive World Cup, which everyone's going to be watching, is a big motivator this season for a lot of players. And a lot of players want to be in it. I mean, I don't know. I'm checking more ages here than a Dorman, but Luke Shaw is somebody I never really know how old he is. He's 30. I didn't realise he was 30. So this is his last tournament. I mean, how a guy who is 30 years of age and has basically missed the last 3 seasons with injury, how he's playing week in, week out. I mean, maybe, to be fair, maybe like Mason Mount, only playing one game a week is the thing. I would hazard a guess that if we were in Europe, Luke Shaw would probably be injured by now, because one game a week is probably the limit of his body, isn't it, really? You play 90 minutes, then you don't play 90 minutes for another week. So that's probably another theory anyway. Right, I want to talk about Amrim now, because I've had a lot of people talking about this and about why we've seen an improvement in Man United in recent weeks. I think it's really, really simple. I've heard people talking about tweaks to the system, players, you know, being moved around differently. And I think that's bollocks, actually. I really do. I think that last season we saw, I mean, even against Grimsby, Dilip was like a right winger at times. Like, it's a 3-4-3, but it's always been adaptable. I think the three or four things that have sort of caught my eye with United in recent weeks goes back to Lemens going in goal. I think that changed a lot, because it gave a platform for the team to be more confident. For the last 18 months, our goalkeeper has been a liability, and that plays on everybody's head. You think about the Fulham game, we didn't concede a corner like we did against Arsenal, but they nearly scored 3 corners, Fulham. You know, maybe these people who go back and watch games and find things we apparently didn't see, maybe they should go back and watch that Fulham game, because Fulham had multiple corners that they nearly scored from. And obviously Arsenal did the week before. That's not happening anymore. Brighton were quite good at corners, and I know they did score one, but we defended them really well up until that point. So the goalkeeper has a big part to play in that. I think having a goalkeeper that is decent off both feet and willing to go long means that we can play a higher line. I think a higher line gets us higher up the pitch. We go higher up the pitch because we've got more confidence in the goalkeeper. And I think higher up the pitch allows us to win the ball higher up the pitch. And then we've got players that are, you know, decent when they get the ball. Like Cunha, like Ahmad, like Bruno, like Mbeumo, we're playing higher up the pitch because we're more confident to move up the pitch. That is leading to more consistent performance, which is leading to more consistent results. And I think familiarity is a big thing as well. This is what I mentioned at the start of the season. I think by game week 10, we were always going to be more familiar with each other because some of these players are new signings. A lot of people have left as well. And overall, I think that breeds confidence into the team. So I don't think that Amrim has tweaked a system or a formation. I just think that we are becoming more confident as we become more familiar with each other. And I think the goalkeeper specifically, we've won every game in the league since he came in. And I'm not saying Lemens is like a player of the year or anything like that. I just think if he put Emi Martinez in goal, this would have happened. I just think the goalkeeper has given more confidence to the back line to allow them to push forward. And then, and also it's enabling us to defend better, which gives you a better platform. And then the front line, which is brand new, is becoming more familiar with each other. I mean, I remember the first couple of games where Ahmad, there was people in the live chat saying Ahmad and Mbeumo look like strangers. They're not combining at all. And now they're combining fantastically well. So yeah, the more they play together, the more familiar they become, and the more the results get better, the more confident they come. So yeah, I just think it's just a gradual familiarity leading to confidence. I think some people are desperate to, probably because they were Amrim out, they want to go, well, I said he needed to change it and he hasn't. But I don't think you can justify that. I don't think you can go, I said change it, he's changed it. He hasn't changed really very much at all. I mean, God, he's still playing Dalot at left wing back. I don't think the Amrim outers were saying he needs to put Dalot at left wing back. He needs to keep playing Bruno and Casemiro in the midfield. I mean, I think that's a testament to how he hasn't changed much. What we're getting is familiarity amongst the players. And, you know, I think that having a goalkeeper, it's not rocket science. All summer, you all spoke about how important a goalkeeper was. And I think it's made a massive difference. I think we need Shaw because I fear Lissandro won't be able to play two games a week after playing very few games in the last few years. But Luciano, we're not playing two games a week. Just slow sports news, breaking news, crunching up cornflakes. We'll only be playing one game a week anyway. So when Martinez is back, he's going to need that spot. Are we back? Are we still on the way? If we are on the way back, when will we be back, in your opinion, says Adel? If we are on the way back, you won't know we're back because it'll happen gradually. We might already be back. We might not be back. We're not back, but we might be back. And what I mean by that is that if this run continues, people will say, well, we were back from Sunderland. If it doesn't continue, then we're not back. So we don't know. We might be back. We might not be back, but we just got to keep winning. And it's funny. I always looked at the Forest and Spurs games as being quite difficult, but I'm absolutely convinced we'll beat Forest on Saturday. They're in the bottom three. They're playing shit. We're playing well. I think we might do another message there. I literally think we might do 2 or 3 nil. And then people are going to get really excited going into the Spurs game. Constantine says, do you think the return of these players could perhaps hurt the team dynamic? Seems like we win more with them not in the squad. Return of what players? I don't know what players you're talking about. Are we talking Martinez or are we talking about like bringing back a Sancho or a Scott McTominay? I mean, yeah, we shouldn't be bringing back any players that we've let go, really. That, you know, we shouldn't be going back there. I don't think that's a good idea at all. But Martinez, I think, is a really important player for us. I mean, look, people were waxing lyrical about how Luke Shaw was stepping into the midfield like, you know, he'd invented it. This is literally what Lissandro Martinez was doing in a back four. Like, I can't wait for Lissandro Martinez to get back. His mentality, his elite, his aggression is amazing. And he gets what it is to play football for Manchester United. He's also brilliant at stepping into the midfield. I mean, if you can do it in a back four, imagine what you'll be able to do with three centre backs. I think it's just, can we get him back fully fit? Because if we can, I think it's going to be a huge improvement. I've said it so many times. Like, we interviewed Rasmus at Carrington nearly 2 years ago, and I think Martinez was out injured and he was just coming back. And he was like, having Martinez back is so important because the way he steps into the midfield and the passes he can play makes us better as a team. I mean, that was 2 years ago in the back four. I mean, I just can't. If we can get Martinez back, I think, you know, you look at, with all due respect to Luke Shaw and Harry Maguire, Yoro, De Ligt and Martinez as a three. Oh my God. I mean, I don't think you can have a more balanced three. You've got a young, quick, tall centre-back who's learning the game. You've got a dominant leader at the top of his game in the centre in De Ligt. And then you've got a ball-playing, left-sided, aggressive, left-footed centre-back in Martinez. Lemens behind him. Cunha and Mbeumo, Ahmad, just need to sort the midfield out. You know, you can see the vision. I mentioned this last week, there are a lot of positives in that United side. It's been massively underachieving. If he sorts the midfield out, we could be a top four team easy. In fact, I think I said when we were going for Baleba and Martinez, I said if we get a midfielder and a goalkeeper, we're fighting for top four. You know, the midfield is still the area. The club know it though. It's not as frustrating as it is that we didn't buy a midfielder, and it is frustrating. The club do know that. Like, it's not like they're going, we don't need a midfielder, there's no value in the market. They tried to get two, they messed up, but at least they know that's the area. A few weeks ago, I was worried Cunha would be Amrin's spare man and not used, but his skill and drive has forced him in. These players on the bench moaning about lack of game time need to try harder, says Nick P. Thank you very much, Nick. Thank you. I'm definitely having a tea every morning in this. Seth says, hunger, passion, mentality, teamwork. Players like Sancho, Garnacho, Rashford play for fame. Now, players are bleeding for the club. Maybe Ruben Amrin's aura plays a part. Seth, you know what? It's probably the most... I'll give you an opinion here. This is probably the most optimistic I've been since Ruben Amrin came in. When he first came in, there was so many people telling us about him. There was so much excitement about him. And I was like, this could be the start of something. It may well have taken a year, but I feel like this is meant... I feel like you could write the last year off and go, this is what the first few weeks were meant to be like, but he's had to knock down a load of shit to get here. I think we're finally starting to see the first few weeks of Amrin a year later. Like, we're actually starting to see what he's all about. And it feels like the journey starts now, which is why I said at the start of the season, I don't like the win ratio thing, because so much of it is based on last season. What's his win ratio this season? I wish we could just delete last season, because he was thrown into a bad situation. Had people like Garnacho and Rashford that he had to deal with, and Anthony. He didn't get backed in the January transfer window. So I think all the losses from when he took the job to the Europa League final of Aston Villa was the last game, wasn't it? I almost feel like they're irrelevant. You know, I think this from the start of this season is where we really should be looking at win ratio. And I know people aren't going to do that, but I genuinely feel that now is the time. And there may be more losses to come. But my problem is, if those losses come, last season's win ratio, you know, it's always like last season gets pumped in. And I feel like, let's say if he lost to Forest, that would be four losses this season, wouldn't it? And people would be going, oh, it's terrible. But I'd be like, is it if we go and win the next three again? I still think there's a lot of work to be done, but I feel like we're finally starting now. I feel like the start should be now, you know? Unfortunately, it can't be because it's a year down the line. But I personally feel that we're starting to see something now. When Mbeumo goes to AFCON, will Bruno get pushed back into the midfield? Also, if Bruno scores his penalties, we'd be second. Are we in a false position, says Liam? Oh, no. I don't like this, Liam. I don't like this second part. First part, I don't know whether Bruno will go back in as a number 10 because I think Amrin really values him in the midfield. So why would you move a player out of position? Even though I think Bruno's out of position already, I think Amrin sees him as in position. As for Bruno's penalty misses and we'd be in second, I find that sort of thing laughable, Liam, because I could say, well, if Gakpo didn't hit the post twice and missed the sitter, we'd have lost to Liverpool, so we wouldn't have had the 3 points. So shoulda, woulda, coulda. We are where we should be. I don't think we can blame Bruno. And what if we'd bought a midfielder in the summer, where would we be? So I don't think Bruno missing two penalties is why we're not second. I think that's just, you know, idealistic. There's plenty of other scenarios that could have gone the other way and cost us. As I said, against Fulham, how many bloody free headers did they miss because we were shit on corners with Binder in goal? I think we need Shaw because I've done that one as well. Okay, great show this morning. I've overrun again, but I don't really care. Last night's 8 o'clock show was fantastic. Yesterday's morning show was overran. This morning's show's overran. Credit to you. The shows are absolutely brilliant at the moment and I'm thoroughly enjoying doing them. So just again, a massive shout out. It was an amazing show last night at 8 o'clock. Hopefully we can replicate it again tonight. But it's been a brilliant show this morning. I've really, really enjoyed it. And I've probably not covered everything I wanted to do, but I think I have. So I hope you enjoyed it too. Beth's back at 2. I'm back at 8. I'm going to try and do FC 26 tonight at 5. Let's see. It's a busy week going on at the moment. I've just had to put back Terry's show to tomorrow because we've got to go and do some stuff as well. But hopefully Career Mode will be back at 5. I'll definitely be on here at 8. Have a great day. Stay safe. Lots to discuss if you didn't watch it live. And we'll be back at 8 o'clock as well. Speak to you all in a bit. Take care.